The Medallion, Chapter 51. Where have you been? The black teeth clicked sloppily together, and the blue-veined eyes glared at Corvin through the chamber door.
Kate was calling for you. You obviously do not care for her as much as you claim, or I would not be forced to hurt her to get you to respond to me.
Corvin squinted at the old man. It may have been Sarah's strength behind him, but he appeared shorter and weaker this time. He simply was a pathetic old man trying too hard to hold on to life, the exact opposite of Reu.
"Aren't you going to say something?" the old man croaked. "Do you enjoy seeing her in pain?"
He stepped to the side of the door to reveal Kate's form lying on the table, her face turned away from him. Corvin pressed toward the barrier in the door. The old man waved him in.
"Come in, Corvin." His voice mocked the title. "We would be most honored to have you join us."
Corvin pushed harder against the barrier and the old man chuckled, his bony shoulders shaking beneath his robe.
"Ah, yes, I forgot to mention. I cannot allow you to enter the chamber until all the members have gathered for council."
He waved a hand in Kate's direction.
"But we can still have a discussion, a meeting of minds."
Kate's face turned toward him, her eyes full of sorrow and her voice weak and quiet. "I'm sorry you had to come back here. I was hoping you had made it home."
"No, Kate, I am the one who is wrong," Corvin said.
Kate smiled. "I heard what you said in the tomb earlier. I forgive you, Corvin. Whatever you do, and whomever you choose to love, I will always care about you." Kate's words washed over Corvin like a hot shower after a long, dirty shift in the darkest reaches of the coal mine. He wanted to speak, to tell her what he felt, but he could only look into her eyes and accept the love they held for him.
"Enough!"
The brash voice hissed out the command, and Kate cried out as invisible bonds yanked her down. The old man raised his medallion, the green light crackling in his blackened hand and hurling Corvin against the far wall of his entry room. The barrier sparked as the man pushed through into Corvin's anteroom, and the overhead light faded as the shrouded face drew near, breathing hard. The power he was using to push Corvin around was exhausting him.
"She cannot forgive you. Make no mistake about that. You are what you are, and you will never change. It's in your blood, boy. Look at you. You're..."
The old man's voice faltered. Corvin looked down and found he was dressed in a fresh tunic. Not as brilliant white as the dress Kate wore, but it was clean, and embroidered in gold over his heart were the twin circles of the hammer. One of the words glowed brightly, the word for compassion. Kate's love and forgiveness had clothed him. Tears filled his eyes.
"Where are you?"
The old man spit the words at him with a spray of saliva.
"Who are you with, and what have they done to you?"
Sarah's voice whispered in Corvin's ear. "Do not tell him where you are, or that you have seen me. He cannot sense I am here with you."
"Answer me now. Are you on your way back to your home? Have you found a scepter?"
The old man's voice pitched higher and higher, like a screaming pinwheel firecracker about to explode. Sarah's voice remained calm. "Tell him you are near the core shield, but you must take the medallion off and leave it in the core to keep it safe." The angry eyes drew closer, and the hand with the medallion rose up, sparking with green fury. Behind him in the chamber, Kate writhed in pain. "I made it through the door into the passages outside Kadir," Corvin blurted out, and the advance slowed. "I'm about to go through the core shield to find the scepter." The medallion lowered, and the hunched-up shoulders relaxed. Kate fell back against the table. The dark-rimmed eyes blinked inside the bobbing hood.
"That is good. How soon can you return?"
"I am not sure," Corvin said. "My father hid the scepter, but he didn't tell me where." The old man pointed both hands toward him, and a spark shot out from one of the medallion points and stabbed into Corvin's chest. The old man's voice was shaking with rage that gripped Corvin's heart.
"Your father should have died when I sent her to kill him and bring them back. None of this would have happened if she had not betrayed me."
"I can find the scepter," Corvin gasped. "Our home is small." The old man released his grip on his medallion and let it slip back against his robe. He allowed his wide sleeves to fall over his hands, gripping their folds to staunch the flow of blood from his pierced fingers.
"You had better find it."
The dark mouth clipped out the words, "or everyone you love will suffer." The evil smile returned and the eyes narrowed in their black caverns.
"Yes, my boy, you love another woman even more than Kate. Cheat me, and she will not be spared. Go now, but do not return without my scepter."
Ceres' voice came urgently in his ear, and Corvin repeated her words. "I need to leave the medallion in the core while I'm gone." The robe swirled about.
"No, you must wear it at all times."
"It won't be safe. There are people who are spying on our family. They broke into our home to search for the medallion and are waiting for me to return."
"Who are they? What do they know about the core?"
"Nothing about the core. They think the medallion is a valuable treasure and they want to steal it and sell it." After a long pause, the darkened hood floated closer along with the stench from the rotten mouth.
"I will give you until the next night of deepest dark to return with my scepter. If you are not back by then, Kate will suffer until she's in such pain she will beg for her life to end."
A wrinkled hand came up sharply to smack the side of Corvin's face.
"And it will all be your fault. All your fault."
Each of the words was accentuated by another slap to Corvin's face. Corvin blinked back the stinging tears. He had never felt so humiliated or so guilty. The old man locked eyes with him for one long moment, then turned around and stalked out, his hand flipping up to dismiss Corvin as the anteroom door closed. The sound of running water and the light from the Lumians in Sari's cave quickly dispelled the fear tied around Corvin's heart. Sari was embracing him from behind and wiping his cheek with her hand. Turning her palm out, she examined the smear of blackened blood across her skin, then got up to wash her hand in the pond and wet her sleeve in the water. After washing Corvin's face, she pulled the medallion from around his neck and dropped it to the ground. Sari grinned. "I've smelled rotten stuff before, but that man's breath could knock out a Burak." Corvin barely managed a smile as he stared at the medallion. "He can only hear you when you are wearing it," Sari said. "That is why we needed to convince him it would not be safe for you to take it home with you."
"How did you know he would agree to let me take it off?" Corvin said.
"As people age, they become more fearful of anything that might lead to their death. He could not let you take the medallion to the surface if there is a chance it might not come back."
"You don't seem to be afraid of getting old."
"Everyone has to battle their fears, Corvin. But when you are with people you love, like my Joctan, you win more battles than you lose. And when you do lose those who have gone on ahead, it is easier to pass that way yourself." Corvin pointed at the medallion. "Doesn't he have anyone who loved him?" Sari gazed over his head, and her eyes softened. "When he was young, he had a wife and two children, and they were all quite happy in Dubakcombe. Everything changed when he became seriously ill and tried to prolong his life by experimenting with the Lumian seeds. His people were dying of starvation, but he did not care. He only wanted to save himself. That's when he made a deal with those who knew how to distill the Lumian seeds into a powerful potion. His son tried to convince him to turn away from his terrible quest, but the old man would not listen, so his son stole that potion and fled to Bandur with his own son, Kael."
"I met Kael," Corvin interrupted. "He's holding my father for ransom."
She frowned. "I don't think Kael would do that. Unlike his grandfather, he is an honorable man." "But Kael put my father into a tank of the gatekeeper's elixir and wouldn't let me talk to him. He also accused Joctan of stealing the hammer. How can that be true?"
Sari nodded. "Kael believes it is, and I have to admit I wondered about the wisdom of Joctan's scheme at the time. Joctan was the youngest person to ever govern Kadir. The old man in the chamber put him in charge of Kadir because he thought he could control him and use him to accomplish his plans to rule the core. But Joctan believed the best course of action would be to remove the hammer, the master medallion, and the scepter and hide them away. He also knew there's another person on the council who also had his own plans to take over the core. I think he may have been referring to the man who used to be the governor of Anamir City before the Great Destruction. Some say he is still alive."
"In Anamir, I met a very old man in a wheelchair," Corvin said. "He was all covered in black, and they called him the Gatekeeper. He is the one who is training an army of the Rakash to attack Kadir." Sari frowned. "I had heard the people of Anamir City had banished the Gatekeeper to the dead city of Ketaelba."
"No. He lives in the powerhouse in Anamir, where he creates new Rakash with his elixir and sends him through to Ketaelba. That's where Kael is living, in the library, but he's taken control of the Gatekeeper's Rakash and plans to use him to attack his father in another city instead."
Sari pushed up a strand of gray hair from her face. "That would be Dubakcombe. Joctan was right.
everyone still has a different plan for the future of the Corps. Perhaps it is time for me to make one of my own, now that I have my strength back. She picked the medallion up by its chain. Come, we need to prepare some fruit nectar so I can keep Kate's body alive while you go find the scepter. Sari led the way back through the garden, pointing out various shapes hanging from the plants for Corvin to pick. At one spot, she had him dig under a prickly bush and pull out a long white root with green bumps over its surface. He carried everything up to the dock, where Sari had him wash them in the lake. Gavin appeared from behind the immense lumen, his face glowing with pleasure and dripping with juice. Sari laughed and tousled his hair. You would have to eat for the rest of your life to put a dent in that one, little mouse. Gavin ducked away from her hand and came over to the dock, where he examined each of the items Corvin was washing. Looking up to Sari, he motioned her over and pulled a small pouch from inside his cloak. Tugging the drawstrings apart, he poured the contents out. To Corvin, it was just a pile of various-sized pebbles, but Sari was impressed. She picked through and held up a yellow one the size of a pea. Where did you ever find this? Nobody has seen a Leta bush since I was young. If Jockton were here, he would personally watch it grow until he could pick the berries, grind the seeds, and make a fresh Leta seed loaf. He always said it was one of the things he missed most, no doubt for its other properties as well. Gavin nodded and closed her hand around the seed. Thank you, Gavin. I'll plant this over by my home to remind me of Jockton. The young boy picked up the largest of the objects, a wrinkled brown seed about the size of a walnut, and held it up to her. Sari examined it closely. I'm afraid I don't know what that one is. Gavin pointed over to the cave where they had left Kate, then lay down on the dock as if he were sleeping and traced out a shape on his chest. Sari shook her head. That's not possible, Gavin. There was only one tree like that in all the Corps, and it never produced any fruit. Gavin jumped up, shaking his head and gesturing in grand fashion to the seed and towards the roof. Sari gave the seed back to the boy. Then I think you should plant it and see what happens. Gavin jumped down from the dock with the seed held high over his head. He walked around the edge of the lake, kicking at patches of dirt until he found the spot he was looking for. Kneeling, the boy dug a shallow hole, dropped in the seed, and covered it up. Using his hands, he mounded the dirt around the spot and then ran to the lake to scoop up water. Sari touched Corvin's shoulder. Let's go see Kate. I think Gavin will be busy with his seeds for a while. Corvin picked up the wash fruit and followed Sari back to the cave. Kate was resting, and her face was peaceful. Sari hung the medallion on the stump of an old fire stick that protruded from the wall. She gestured for him to follow her to the kitchen room. Put the fruit on the table, and I'll prepare them while you talk with Kate. You may have to be touching her in order for her to hear you. Help her to understand what our plan is so she knows not to worry. Corvin placed his armload of fruit on the high counter. I'll talk with her, but I'm not quite sure what our plan is. Sari laughed. I'm sorry, Corvin. I do get ahead of myself at times. Tell her you are going home to find the scepter, but once you return, you won't be putting the medallion on because you're going to come to her without the old man knowing. Jockton told me the old man had cut a tunnel into the chamber. When I saw his blood on your face out in the garden, I knew for certain that he is there in the flesh. But if he can get inside, so can we. We can take Kate's body to the chamber and restore her without having to give him the scepter.
Why don't we do that now? Why do I need to get the scepter at all? We're not getting it for him. We're getting it for us, as we may need it to set Kate free. That is our first priority. But then afterwards, you can use it to become our Corvan and save the Corps. That is why you returned to us in the first place. Picking up a stubby knife, she went back to peeling the fruits. Corvin walked back to the other room to sit beside Kate. Sari's plan was good only as far as setting Kate free. After that, he would trade the scepter to Kael in return for his father's life, and then the three of them would leave the Corps forever. Kael could fight his grandfather and rule the Corps. He was from the ruling family and was better suited to be their Corvan. Kate's hand was warm, and he could feel her heartbeat through his fingertips on her wrist. For a long time, he just held her hand and watched her face. Kate had changed a lot since he had first come down to the Corps. Kate's hand was warm, and he could feel her heartbeat through his fingertip on her wrist. For a long time, he just held her hand and watched her face. Kate had changed a lot since she had first come down to the Corps. She wasn't full of anger and regrets anymore. Now she had confidence in herself and could easily pass for one of Itea's sister warriors or even a princess like Tirith. Reaching into his pocket, he pulled out the band of gems. With all Kate had been through, she deserved to wear them. As he placed it around the crown of her head, his eyes fell on the tapestry at her shoulder, and the hair in his arms stood up. The girl, facing the tree, also had a tiara in her hair, and she looked incredibly similar to Kate. He looked over to the other side, but the boy's face was too faded to make out. Sarah came into the room and stopped at Kate's feet. She stared, opened her mouth to speak, then stopped herself. Shaking her head, she moved to the far side of the table. Once seated, she ran a finger over the tiara and nodded. Her mouth moved with silent words as she lifted a cup of muddy brown fluid and let a few drops fall onto Kate's lips. The liquid seeped into Kate's mouth, but Kate didn't swallow. Sarah repeated the process a few more times before they saw Kate's throat move ever so slightly. Corvin spoke up. Kale had a clear liquid he called the lifelight. Would it help Kate? Sarah's head jerked up so fast she sloshed the fluid onto the table beside Kate. Are you certain he called it that? Yes. He used it to restore a watcher who couldn't speak anymore. Corvin's hand unconsciously went to the cord tied to the pouch around his neck that contained Kale's lifelight. He lowered his hand back to his side. For now, it might be better to keep it to himself. No wonder his grandfather is aging so badly. Kale's father must have taken the last of the lifelight from him, and without it, his blood will eventually stop flowing. That is why his skin is turning black and crumbling off. I think only his anger and his bitterness is keeping him alive now. Then the lifelight could help Kate? Corvin leaned forward. To live, yes, and to live for much longer than any person should. She would eventually become like him. Sarah paused and thought. I hope that's not what he has in mind for her. Surely he's not trying to recapture his lost love through Kate. What do you mean? Her brow crinkled. Never mind. Give no thought to the ramblings of an old woman. Sarah gave Kate a few more drops of the brown liquid. That is enough for now. It will keep her body strong and renew her spirit as well. She held out the cup. Now you must drink to prepare yourself for the task at hand. Corvin took the fluid from her. The fruity smell was vaguely familiar. Drink it all, Sarah urged, and don't make any funny faces. Corvin tipped his head back and gulped down the thick fluid. This one tasted more like a banana milkshake. He tipped the cup higher and waited for the last bit to drip out, but Sarah took it back from him. I'll make you some more. Corvin tucked Kate's hand back under the tapestry and followed Sarah into the kitchen. She picked out a knife from the rows of utensils hanging on the wall and handed it to him. You can use this one to help me peel. Jockton made it for me, but the handle is far too long. He said you can push out more of the blade with the button on the side, but I never bother. Corvin took the strange knife from her hand. The long, white, tube-like handle had only a stub of a knife pointing out of one end. He pressed the button, and a narrow blade shot out all the way and locked into place like a thin switchblade. I'm glad I never tried it. Watch yourself, that point is very sharp. Corvin pressed the button and used the countertop to ease the blade back in most of the way. Jockton hadn't created his knife for peeling fruit, it was a concealed weapon. Examining the bottom of the handle, he noticed a thin band of sandals ran around it about a finger's width from the end. He gave it a hard twist, and it popped off in his hand. He laughed. What's so funny? Sarah asked. Corvin held up the notched end that had been hidden under the cap. Looks like Jockton hid the key to his secret passage in plain sight. Sarah shook her head. I guess he wanted to have it close to hand in case we needed to leave in a hurry. What a smart man. Her smile faded away. I sure miss him. Her eyes welled up with tears, and she went back to her work. Corvin capped the key and used the blade to awkwardly follow her example. Sarah held out a thin slice of fruit. Try this one. Corvin popped the slice into his mouth and grimaced. It was more sour than a lemon. Sarah laughed. Now that's a funny face. I don't like them much either, but they are very good for you. Corvin swallowed as fast as possible. Why do things that are so good for us always taste so bad? Sarah stopped peeling. My Jockton said it was the hard things in life that develop our character. Those who choose only the sweet and easy things never become as strong as they were meant to be. Corvin nodded. He was the one that was always willing to let his mother do the work around the house so he could sleep or play. Jockton was a wise man, he said. Sarah pointed her paring knife at him. Jockton was once young too, and he also made mistakes. I believe you will become a great leader. He is your past father, and his blood flows in your veins. I still can't figure out all the family connections. What does past father mean? Sarah laughed. Oh, I am a silly old woman. I forget many things these days. I was so sure I had told you the last time you were here. She put a hand to her cheek. No, that's right. I was going to tell you, but then George showed up and made you and Kate leave. Putting her knife down, she came around the table to take his hands in hers. Jockton and I are the parents of your grandfather. We are the ones who sent him up to the surface to keep him safe from the old man in the chamber. Corvin looked into her smiling face, trying to puzzle things through. So you are my... I am your great-grandmother. She let go of his hands and lifted hers in the air. What do you think of that? Corvin grinned. I think that's great. Sari wrapped her arms around him and held him tight. When she let him go, her eyes were full of tears. Your grandfather was just a baby when I had to let him go. Jockton would go to the surface to check on him from time to time, but I didn't see my boy grow up, and it wasn't until he was older that I saw him again. That is why it has been so wonderful to have you come back. You look so much like him, although I think you have your mother's eyes. You know my mother? Sarah's eyes widened. Oh, my. I was certain she would have told you. Corvin shook his head. Sari put her hands on his shoulders. Corvin, your mother is Kale's younger sister. Corvin stared at her as goosebumps rose on his arms. No wonder his mother was so tall and looked so much like the women in the library of Cate Elba. It also explained what Kale had been telling him about his mother. He found himself shaking his head, for that would also make... Yes, my dear boy, it means you are the great-grandson of the old man in the chamber. That is why he is so certain he can manipulate you to do his will. He believes you have his same weaknesses, that you are selfish as he is and will succumb to the desire for power. Corvin dropped his eyes. The problem was he did have his great-grandfather's weaknesses, at least when it came to consuming the energy of the Lumion seeds. Sari continued, When the great destruction started, Jockton and I hid out here, and that's when we discovered this cavern was on the edge of the core shield, and there were cracks in the wall. Jockton was the one who found other ways to the surface, but he knew we were far too old to acclimatize to your world. But we feared for our baby boy, and also that the three chamber items would be found, so we decided to take your grandfather, the hammer, and the scepter to the surface to keep them safe from the old man in the chamber. Our son grew up among a tribe of honorable people who looked after him. In time, he married a leader's daughter, and your father was born. Sari touched Corvin's face. Does that help you to understand your past and why you are so special to the core? Corvin could barely nod. There was too much to take in. I've never heard my grandfather's name, and he died shortly after I was born. What was he like? Sari returned to the counter and picked up her knife, blinking back tears. I never would have let him go to the surface if your grandfather in the chamber was not seeking to kill both us and him. He was my only child, and I loved him dearly, so I was grateful he was raised by such a wonderful family on the surface. It set his feet on the right path, and I was sure he would be the one to come back and defeat the old man and lead the core out of darkness. That was my only hope. Sari resumed her chopping. The old man from the chamber, your great-grandfather, he located my son through his spies, the creatures he brought into being by using the lifelight, those watchers. Some say his plan was to send Neera, his daughter, and also your mother to the surface to kill your father and bring the chamber items back. We will never know for sure what happened, but Neera ended up in Bandur on the day both her parents died. Then she showed up briefly in Kadir, and then she vanished. It wasn't until much later that we found out she chose to stay on the surface and be your father's counterpart. That is why Jockton said you were born of both the spheres. But the man in the chamber is so old, Corvin said. How can my mother be his granddaughter? Your mother's family is descended from the first pureblood families of the core. Their lifelines are incredibly long, even without using Lumion power to extend them, as your grandfather in the chamber has done. Your father, however, is not so fortunate, both because of his status in the core, his mother from the surface world, and because your son up above took so much of his young life. Kale said the gatekeeper's blue elixir would restore my father. For your mother's sake, I hope it is true, or she will live a long, lonely life after he is gone. Sadness filled Sari's eyes, and she retreated back to the other side of the counter to pick up her knife. Corvin joined her. Kale also said he believed my mother would come looking for my father. I would not be surprised. She loves him deeply. Corvin held up the knife and uncapped the key. Then I must go home and stop her from coming down here. Sari stopped peeling a fruit and looked at him through misty eyes. You could try, but you must remember that all the water that flows cannot drown love. Your mother may yet have to fight her own grandfather in order to save her counterpart's life. Corvin clenched his jaw. How can he be her grandfather? The two are so different, and he is so mean. When deep evil comes into a family, especially at its head, it forces everyone to make extremely hard choices. Thankfully, the son stood up to the father, and then Kale and his sister Neera turned away from him. Why do you always say him? Doesn't the old man have a name? He did, but it was a special name, a name signifying someone who is both precious and greatly loved. None of us that know him now would ever use it again. What was it? His real name was T'Kalion. Corvin's blood ran cold. T'Kalion was a nickname my mother called me when I was younger. My grandfather had insisted on calling me Corvin, but she didn't like it and called me T'Kalion instead. Why would she name me after her father? It's not the same. Your name means my only one, and it says you are precious to someone in a personal way. Maybe that's how his name started out with his own mother, but then he called himself T'Kalion, because that variation means the only one, the title of a powerful ruler he thought he would become. Sari mumbled something to herself as she picked up a stubby tool to crush fruit pieces in a bowl. Neither of them spoke, and when the mash was a uniform consistency, she poured it into a cup and handed it to him. We have much to discuss, and there are many things I must teach you, but for now you must focus on the task at hand. Drink this up, and then you should rest a bit before leaving for the surface. You can lie on the table beside Kate. It will give her some peace to know that you are near. Corvin drained the thick liquid. Thank you for telling me the truth, and also for all you have done to help Kate. She took the cup from him. I think it is I who must thank you, for you have brought honor back to our family and hope back to the core. Corvin turned toward Kate with a heavy heart. Could the great-grandson of the horrible man in the chamber do anything good for these people? Especially one recently addicted to Lumion seeds? One who was keeping the lifelight a secret from those who cared about him the most? He lay down beside Kate and stared at the Lumion overhead. If there was any hope for the people of the core, they would have to look for it in someone else.